Dream Queen. What exactly is a eunuch? The teacher looked up from his open Bible. What'd you say? What's a eunuch? The voice repeated. Mr. Taylor saw the young, questioning face of Alan Capello staring up at him from the third row. King Xerxes had a bunch of them running around his palace. He even sent one to deliver a message to Queen, "I'll come when I'm good and ready," Vashti. Mr. Taylor adjusted his glasses. She'd refused to obey a direct order. That's why Xerxes dethroned her and started looking for a replacement. So, Alan pressed, what's a eunuch? Sounds like a kind of antelope. Laughter erupted in the classroom. The teacher smiled at his students, enjoying the fact that someone had been listening close enough to the story to catch an unfamiliar word. Well, you see, the man said hesitantly, kings in those days had lots of wives and, shall we say, female companions. These were the most desirable women of the kingdom. Since ladies were seldom placed in positions of authority, someone had to watch over the harem. Mr. Taylor glanced about the room of sixth graders. So men were prepared for the job. Prepared? Another student asked. The teacher cleared his throat. That's right. To remove the temptation of becoming romantically involved with one of these lovely women, a little preventive surgery was performed on each and every eunuch in the royal residence. The room was silent for a long moment. Then a collective gasp filled the air. I don't think I want to hear any more, Alan called, sitting a little higher in his chair. Sorry I asked. Mr. Taylor shook his head. Those were pretty bizarre times. Arrests and death decrees were passed out like parking tickets. Everything the king desired, every word he spoke, became law immediately. That was the world of King Xerxes, and that was the environment Esther faced when she entered the palace. The man paused. Now, if there are no more questions, I'll continue where we left off yesterday. He lifted his Bible. As you remember, King Xerxes had dethroned Queen Vashti and decided to pick a replacement from the most alluring virgins in his kingdom. There was a fellow named Mordecai living nearby, a third-generation Jew with an adopted daughter who was really his cousin. He'd raised her since childhood. This young woman, Esther, happened to be beautiful, a virgin, and available. She also happened to be a Jew, just like her father. Well, the king takes one look at Esther and bells go off under his royal crown. Next thing she knows, she's queen of all the lands between India and Upper Egypt. Old man Xerxes gives her a priceless ring, throws a great banquet in her honor, proclaims a holiday, and distributes gifts to everyone in sight. How romantic, a girl in the front row sighed. Glancing at her teacher, she asked, what did you give Mrs. Taylor when you and she got engaged? I bought her a watch at Kmart and we ate supper at Taco Bell, the man responded flatly. Alan grinned as his hand slipped to his side and then, with a flick of his wrist, he sent a folded wedge of paper tumbling over the desktop of his best friend and next-door neighbor, Monica Holt. The girl scooped up the message, her eyes not leaving the front of the room. As Mr. Taylor continued his story, she unfolded the note and read the words scrawled across it in heavy dark letters. I see the Anderson party kept you up all night, too. Monica nodded her response. Seemed the couple across the street from their houses had decided to throw a bash of their own, complete with rock music, boisterous laughter, and racing car motors. Now, as Bible class wore on, and a warm midwinter sun shone through the wide windows of the room, Alan and Monica's normally energetic bodies were begging them to make up for lost sleep. But Mr. Taylor's story was interesting. Monica decided to lay her head on her arms and just rest a little as she listened. The teacher's words blended with the rhythm of her slow breathing. Now, a guy named Haman, one of King Xerxes' high-up officials, was a proud and boastful character, she heard him say. He didn't like the fact that when he passed by the king's gate, everyone bowed low to him except one man. Haman got madder and madder until one day he told his wife, I'm going to get that idiot. He keeps insisting he only bows to an invisible god in heaven. Well, I'll show him. When the time's right, I'll strike. That good-for-nothing Mordecai doesn't know what a big mistake he's making. Monica felt something nudge her shoulder. She remained still, not wanting to draw attention. She felt another nudge. Not now, she whispered. Wait till after class. Suddenly, a warm, moist blast of air blew across the back of her neck, accompanied by the loudest, most awful noise she'd ever heard. Sitting bolt upright, she toppled from her chair and landed spread-eagle across a deep pile of straw. Turning, she gazed up into the soulful brown eyes of a camel. "Here, here!" someone called from nearby. A man's face appeared beside the beast's. "Are you okay? Are you hurt? This creature has no sense at all. Just bullies his way around like he's king of the world." Monica blinked.
Who are you?"
"Who am I?" The speaker bent closer. "You must have bumped your head or something. I'm your neighbor. Don't you remember?" The girl glanced out across a busy street where people and animals rushed by, stirring up clouds of dust.
"Where am I?"
Monica breathed.
"Where? Oh, dear. You must be badly hurt. I'll take you to the doctor."
No, Monica countered, shaking her head. "I'm okay. Really, it's just..." Her response was interrupted by a blare of trumpets. The man helped her to her feet as a collection of high-stepping horses strode by. These were followed by a group of soldiers carrying colorful banners. Looking around, she noticed that everyone seemed to be dressed in some sort of costume, flowing robes of white, purple, and blue. Men wore cloth hats and belts. Most of their faces were half covered with beards of brown or gray. Suddenly, everyone dropped to their knees as a large horse bearing a short, fat rider trotted by. Monica impulsively did the same. Glancing beside her, she noticed the man with the camel continued standing straight and tall, his face stern, determined. The horseman glared in their direction and then was gone. In moments, the street had filled with hurrying feet, as if nothing had happened. Monica remained on her knees, staring up at her companion.
You're Mordecai, she gasped.
Monica sat stunned. One moment she'd been listening to Mr. Taylor tell a Bible story in class, and the next she was being yelled at by a camel and carrying on a conversation with Mordecai, the father of Queen Esther. "I've got to go," her companion said. "My daughter wants to see me at the palace. She says it's urgent. Are you sure you're all right?"
"Yes, I'm fine," Monica stated, smiling.
"But you'd better hurry. Esther has some bad news." Mordecai paused. "How do you know?" The girl blinked.
I'm not sure. I just know."
Her friend frowned and disappeared into the crowd, camel firmly in tow.
"Wait a minute," Monica breathed. "I'm dreaming. That's it. Mr. Taylor is telling the story of Esther, and I'm dreaming it."
She looked down at the long purple robe draped over her shoulders. A colorful bolt of cloth was tied securely around her waist.
"I've got to be dreaming," she said. "Otherwise, I wouldn't be caught dead in this outfit."
"Did you hear? Did you hear?" A young boy ran up beside her, face flushed with excitement. "Haman's convinced the king to make a decree. All Jews are to be killed. That means us. Guess Mordecai finally knocked that fat slob over the edge with his I bow only to God routine. King Xerxes is going to be really upset when he finds out his precious queen is not only the most beautiful woman in the kingdom, but also a Jew. Come on." Monica grabbed the boy.
Hey, wait a minute. You're Alan."
"Alan?" the boy chuckled. "My name isn't Alan. Say, what's with you? You're acting like a camel stomped on your head." Monica stared at the boy.
"Okay, have it your way. I'm not me and you're not you, right?"
The boy frowned.
"Whatever you say."
The two youngsters hurried away, leaving the street to the busy vendors and weary travelers passing by. Soon Monica found herself creeping along a stone wall to a spot where the boy insisted they'd been many times before.
"We can look right into the king's throne room, and no one knows we're here. See?"
Monica peered through a crack in the wall. There sat a royal-looking man adorned with a flowing robe and tall golden crown.
"Cool," the girl whispered.
Her companion blinked. "Well, actually, it's quite hot today." Monica pointed.
"Look, I think I see the queen standing in the doorway."
"That's her, all right," the boy nodded.
"Man, she's brave. If the king doesn't want to see her, he can have her killed on the spot."
Suddenly, Xerxes held out his scepter.
"Whew," the boy whispered. "Everything's okay now. He's inviting her to come in."
"What is it, Esther?" The children heard the man call. "What's your request?
Even up to half my kingdom, it'll be given you." "Ask for Kuwait," Monica encouraged.
"Quiet," her friend warned.
"If it pleases you," Esther replied, "let the king, together with Haman, come to a banquet I have prepared for him."
"What?" Monica gasped. "Haman got the king to decree all Jews are to die, and she's inviting them for brunch?"
What is she, crazy? The girl paused. Wait, I know what happened next. They had two banquets. Let's go to the second one.
How are we going to do that? The boy asked.
Hey, it's my dream.
The banquet hall was filled to overflowing with laughing people. Queen Esther sat dressed in silken fineness, a bejeweled crown resting regally on her head. The king and Haman were to her left and right, both enjoying the food and the entertainment, a group of talented jugglers. Monica and her friend took up positions nearby, behind a large potted plant where they could see and hear all.
Queen Esther, they heard the king ask above the joyful din, what is your request?
The woman nodded.
If I have found favor with you, grant me my life and spare my people who've been sold for slaughter.
Who would do such a thing? The king gasped.
Turning, Esther pointed at the man sitting beside her. The adversary and enemy is this vile Haman. King Xerxes' face grew red with rage. He rose quickly and stomped from the room. The laughter ceased. The jugglers dropped their balls, and everyone hurried away, leaving Esther and Haman alone.
How can you do this to me? The man screamed. Xerxes will kill me and my family for sure.
You want me to feel sorry for the man who is about to butcher all the Jews in the kingdom, including me?
Please, Haman begged, reaching for the queen. Don't do this.
He moved toward her, pressing her against a chair.
It's not fair. I'm a good man. I don't want to die.
What's this?
An angry shout echoed from the doorway.
Will you even molest the queen while she is in my own house?
As soon as the words left the king's mouth, Haman sank to the floor in shame, covering his face. A eunuch approached Xerxes hesitantly.
Your Highness, a gallows 75 feet high stands by Haman's house. He had it made for Mordecai, the man who saved your life once by uncovering a plot to assassinate you.
So, the king growled, you would even murder those who protect my life?
Turning to the eunuch and pointing at Haman, he commanded,
hang him on it!
Guards rushed in and dragged the screaming, pleading man from the banquet hall. Xerxes walked over to his queen. Taking her face in his hands, he spoke softly, lovingly.
I'll make it right, he said. I'll save your people.
The afternoon sun shone through the rough wooden supports of Haman's gallows. The executioner gave the signal, and Monica saw a man's body drop through the trap door. Down, down, down it tumbled until the rope snapped taut with a sharp crack.
No!
Monica called impulsively, covering her eyes.
What did you say?
Mr. Taylor asked, looking up from his desk. The girl peeked through her fingers at the empty classroom. The muffled sounds of recess drifted through the closed windows.
Were they saved? Monica gasped.
Who?
Esther's people.
Why, yes, Mr. Taylor nodded. God always saves his people. He paused. Are you all right? Alan explained about the party. That's why I let you sleep. A smile slowly spread across the young girl's face.
Yes, I'm fine. Now.
Hey, Monica, Alan called from the doorway. Are you done with your beauty rest?
Yeah, I'm awake.
Nothing personal, you understand, the boy whispered across the room.
But you snore like a camel.
Monica's mouth dropped open.
A what? During class, you were snoring. Sounded like the camel we saw at the zoo last summer.
The girl jumped up.
No, that wasn't me. It was part of my dream.
What dream? Alan asked as the two headed down the hallway. Mr. Taylor shook his head and smiled. With a contented sigh, he reached across the desk and closed his big, well-worn Bible.